everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast.
Where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yeah, and we're going to have to do this one while running from a whole pack of zombies because this is what we need to do.
Yeah, I've got to look out on the door while we talk.
We're going to talk about World War Z by Max Brooks, and we're also going to talk some about the movie with Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Brad Pitt of the long hair.
Emergency skills needed are haircuts. Desperate haircuts.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Cool. So let's talk about the book first.
Okay. Yes.
So World War Z, it's not a typical novel. In fact, would you even call it a novel? It's called a novel. I guess it is.
Well, I think it's a novel, but it's told in a interview documentary style.
Yeah,
it's almost like reading a movie script in a way.
Yeah, I guess kind of. You know, and I listened to the audiobook. I didn't have any print version of this book.
Oh,
I listened to it 100% on audio. So what it was a series of interviews. There's an interviewer that was played by Max Brooks in the audiobook. And each chapter, I guess you'd say, is an interview of somebody about this World War Z, which was a zombie apocalypse war that happened on the Earth. And, I mean, he interviews everybody from, like, a monk, military people, there was a housewife in Montana or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's... You know, so I didn't even count them up, but there's a whole bunch of these chapters, a whole bunch of characters, and they're all just telling the story of what they went through during this war.
Well, and he starts off by the conceit of the book, I guess you would say, is that he is the person who was hired or contracted by the UN to do the final report on it so that they can kind of look at everything and, I guess, assess preparedness for the future and all that kind of stuff. And he wanted to include all these interviews. And they said, no, we need a report, not a book, but you're free to write a book. And so the idea is the reporter who went and gathered everything, here are his source materials. Because he's afraid that if you only have a report, you lose the humanity and the important things that you get from all these personal interviews. And so he starts from the very first person, I guess, who you can say was a documented case of patient zero, in essence, as close as you can get. And then he follows the trail of this infection and worldwide problem all the way through to the decisions of what to do about it, the different countries' attempts to get it under control, to current day, which is, you know, where the report's given. So obviously they've made it through. But because of the intensity with which this is written and the different ways he twists it and the fact that he's going all around the world and looking at it from so many different angles, you feel while you're reading it. And I read the print version a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Well, and I looked through it again this time.
Mm-hmm.
You still feel that intensity that you feel from listening to the audio version. It's really an amazing book because he hits on so many topics.
Yeah, and that's what it, you know, there's so many of these stories that, you know, all, on, you know, from one perspective, you've got all of these zombie stories, you know, and really amazing, you know, some of it is stuff I haven't heard before, which is kind of stunning, you know, but that was neat. But the thing to me that really grabbed me about this book was the global perspective that I really liked about it, to be talking about what things were going on in Israel or Finland, Antarctica, Montana. I'm just looking at a list here.
Paris, South Africa.
Greece. So that whole perspective, you know, it gave it kind of a, I don't know, like a James Bondish, you know, whenever he's always in Europe or, what's that other thing? The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
You know, I love those movies a lot.
Yeah.
And, one of the things I love about him is like, hey, cool, we're in Europe, you know, or, I just really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this stuff, you know, the Israeli stuff that happens in this book was so interesting.
Oh, and especially because it's told from the point of view of a young radical, was he Palestinian?
Yeah, there's some, a Palestinian, yeah.
Yeah.
It says here, you know, I'll put all this on the website, but I have a list of all of the actors and all of their roles. So,
and the audiobook is superb.
Yes,
for a long
really
time,
is.
All they had was an abridged version. And I was so angry I had it, but I wouldn't listen to it because I'm like, why would they cut any of this out? And so luckily, one of the really great things about the movie is it made the book popularized again to push it, and they recorded all the parts they hadn't done and put it together into a complete book. So
yes, and they
and it's
there's
amazing.
Really great actors reading each part. You know, Nathan Fillion, Paul Sorvino, Carl Reiner. It's amazing who they got. J.O. Sanders. Martin Scorsese,
yeah.
Simon Pegg, Denise Crosby, yeah, just a lot of really neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the Palestinian that you're talking about, it says militant son / family moved to Israel.
That's it.
The actor's name militant is Walid Zuit Attar, and he plays a person called Saladin Kadar.
Yeah.
But yeah, and before that, you had an Israeli spy played by Carl Reiner. Jürgen Warmbrunn.
That's right. I forgot he did that. I know when I was listening, because I think I had an audio, I must have had a review book copy, but when I was listening, I had to print it out from Wikipedia or somewhere so I could keep track of who was who.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I found a really nice list and I'll make sure to link to where it came from. It was on someone's blog and it's nice and complete. Tells
good.
You kind of where they're from and, you know, like an example at the beginning here, Meteora, Greece, Bandits in Cave / Canadian Soldiers account. Nathan Fillion is Stanley McDonald, Canadian Soldier. Yeah.
That is a good list. I'm going to copy that when you put it there.
All right, we'll do.
Print it out.
Yeah. So it's fun. And it's, I don't know, it's a zombie story, survival story.
But,
you know, everybody's got all these different. You know, perspectives on it.
Yeah, but it's almost, in a sense, you could really take this, except for the zombie aspect, which isn't as gruesome, usually, as you would expect at all. There are some stories where you do feel it more. For instance, the teenager in Japan who's escaping.
Yeah.
That's told in enough detail where I was like, But, a lot of the time, because what they're talking about is their part of the struggle or their realization of what they're fighting or some of the logistics of it, you almost feel like you're following an account of something like the Black Plague and how do we stop it. It's focused a lot on, through these people's stories, which is what keeps it interesting, on how do governments react? How is personal preparedness? What skills are needed just for plain survival in an emergency? And it's not told that way, but that's the impression that you're left with. And it's when I looked at some of the reviews on Goodreads, people were saying, this is like reading a sociological study as a novel. Everybody was saying they'd never read anything like it because it was so compelling as a story.
And yeah, and
it's so thought-provoking.
And how the research this guy must have had to do and the thought. That's what was so stunning to me about it. You know, I expected something much lighter when I first encountered this book. I thought, you know, this is just going to be fun. You know, these are going to be zombie stories. But the whole reason why I like zombie stories in the first place is not because of the zombies. It's because of the people and the survival of the people and what they do. And it's a story method that you can use to create society brand new, you know, and things like that happen all the time in those stories, you know, like The Walking Dead. I haven't kept up with that, as you know, I think I'm halfway through the previous season and it's been a while since I've watched them. But you know, that series, the people against the other people has become kind of the focus of that story. And, you know, zombies are out there, but they're not like the focus anymore at least at the point that I stopped watching. But it's all about what they're doing to each other because,
Because society's broken down.
Yeah,
and
society's broken down. You know, nobody's going to arrest anybody. You know, so you can get a powerful person that's going to take over. And you know, there's a person in there called the governor in that story. That, but anyway, not a good fella.
Just the name doesn't sound right for after society's gone.
Exactly.
Well, they. That's kind of the thing about these apocalyptic stories, though. Yeah. It's kind of like reading The Stand, you know, which we did.
And the question always becomes, you know, hey, would we rebuild this again? As in, you know, if we had the chance to do it over again, would we do the same thing again? You know, are there things in society that we should leave out, or things we should add, or things, you know, those are really interesting things to think about.
Yeah, it
and
strips
these stories.
Off.
These stories give you that.
Yeah,
way to think about it.
Yeah. It strips off all the stuff where a lot of those people are still around. You just kind of are surprised when they pop up because they're not as nakedly power hungry or whatever it is. I was just to change books for a second. I was just finishing Little Dorrit by Charles Dickens last night.
Ooh, Charles Dickens.
Oh,
I call him Chuck.
Oh, I think I'm going to have to, because when I open one of his books, it's like sinking into the best story ever.
Yeah.
And I now admire him more than ever after reading Little Dorrit. However, my point was, part of that whole book examines how do you act when you're poor and how do you act when you're rich. And in the book, I feel like when I'm telling spoilers, of course, the book is quite old. It was written during the Civil War. But one of the things it's examining is something that's just like all these Wall Street scandals. You're watching it build up, everybody's oblivious, and I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is familiar. I mean, he's making it very obvious to you, and then he makes a statement at the end that where somebody says, well, I just hope everybody can learn from this so there aren't more victims, and someone's like, you're kidding, right? Because as long as humans are around, they're going to react in this way.
Yeah.
They're going to want the riches, they're going to want this stuff, and they're going to ignore all the warning signs, and people will take advantage of it. And so it's that same quality that you're talking about, that human behavior and where is it exposed. I think that's why I love those apocalyptic stories. It's not only the different societies they encounter, which is what he's doing by taking us around the world, I guess. Maybe that's what makes this so good, is they've all are in the process, as he tells it, of either breaking down or having broken down, and you have the survivors and the rebuilding. And how do you solve a zombie problem?
Yeah, and those details were interesting too, and you always get the aspect, you know, where the people like the vice president who is still concerned about re-election, and you're just like, man, this is the zombie, you know, this is an apocalypse here, and you know, why can't even then you throw out this mindset, you know, which. You know,
well,
we all wish people would not worry about re-election and just do what they need to do, and then not want to be elected so badly, you know.
Right.
But, you know, to have that happen even in the face of what he's facing was the problem is it rings true. And you're like, yeah, there are going to be people like that that don't, you know, even then don't strip away this unnecessary stuff. You know, they're thinking about the wrong things.
Well, think about the guy's story. He was the bodyguard for all those celebrities.
Yeah, that was
who had the best stuff. They were just having a huge party. They were all kind of guarded, and then they are so intent on their own celebrity that they're broadcasting it. And the common people all go, "We want that too!" And they're climbing the fence and smashing the barricades, and it's all going down.
Yeah,
all because they can't forget this idea of celebrity, which means nothing anymore.
And it doesn't mean anything, and it, you know, it shouldn't mean anything now, you know, but it does, and that's one of the things you get out of there is like, oh, this is really, the whole thing's kind of silly.
Well, and it's funny because he doesn't come back to very many characters. There are a couple of characters, well, maybe more than that, but there are a few characters who he will put more lengthy interviews in with, or who will pop up in more than one place. But almost everybody, it's one story and out.
Yeah, and when I listened to the end of this book, it was the night before last.
Okay.
I didn't realize, it took me a minute to realize that there's a whole section called goodbyes, and they're very yes. short. And it took me a second to realize that I wasn't listening to new people again.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it's so, you know, so much had happened. You know, this book isn't huge or anything, but there, you know, you really feel like you've listened to a lot of this stuff.
Well, it's 300 pages.
Yeah,
so
about 12 hours on audio.
When you have all these different interviews in here, I mean, it's one thing when you're following the thread of the story because they have a little introduction to who all these people are. He's not reintroducing them. He's just Troy Montana, Mrs. Yeah. Miller and I, and you're kind of going, wait, who's this? You're yeah. even doing it if you read the book, but I oh shoot, I lost what I was going to say.
Well, I'll continue on, on this goodbyes. Yeah, there's one of my favorite sections on this is a really short one. In the goodbye section, I believe it's the Jessica Hendricks. Okay. It's a fleeing child, and it's just a really short statement of the whole problem of evil, where she says, "I can't believe that these people are still alive when I lost everybody that I lost."
Yeah.
And that was very poignant. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, that's the one who was a girl when it happened, or a teenager, yeah. right?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. And then the one right after that was Mary Jo Miller, the suburban mom played by Denise yeah. Crosby. And, you know, her little statement there at the end, that was interesting too. You know, all of her concerns and anger at government and all the things that had happened that they had done. Just, I mean, it was so well put. It's, you know, it just makes you think about a lot of stuff. So some of this stuff in that last section kind of tried to pull some things together thematically anyway.
Well, yeah, because I was also struck when I was looking at this and, yeah, Jessica Hendricks, who she says, I once met an ex-Iranian pilot who was traveling through Canada looking for a place to settle down. He said that Americans are the only people he's ever met who just can't accept that bad things can happen to good people. Maybe he's right. And then she says the thing about, I was listening to this guy doing fart jokes and insults, and this man survived and my parents didn't. I try not to be bitter.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's, and at one point they also, Americans are characterized by being in love with technology and in love with science. And I think those things go hand in hand because I think for whatever reason, we have this innate sense of justice and an innate sense of you should be able to solve problems, and we never give up. And the guy who, a great story is the guy who's telling it from the Cuban perspective, because it completely changes Cuba, even though that's not what they expect at all. And he is saying, I now understand why El Jefe Castro was so afraid of the Americans. Because it doesn't matter where they are, they kind of infect everyone. Because the Americans come in as second-class citizens when they're all escaping, and they were able to keep the zombies out of Cuba. And they wind up becoming field laborers and whatever they need. But yet, this sense of the way Americans kind of reconstruct things for themselves within their own little thing kind of eventually makes Cuba into this, the best of the communist ideal and the best of the capitalist ideal, in a sense. So he's still giving, even though he's decrying a lot of the things that are wrong with our country, especially Max Brooks, I mean, he's still saying, but here are some of the admirable qualities or just the indelible marks of our national identity.
Yeah, yeah. He does seem to be a little bit of an undertone of the anti-isolationism in the whole thing. You know,
and I can go with that.
Yeah, you know, want to be part of the world, not isolated.
I don't think isolationism, I mean, yeah, you can't survive like that.
Yeah, not in the long term. I think that there are some things that have to be done. But yeah. Another aspect of the book that I thought was really nifty was the Holy Russian Empire. It just. I mean, I had the same reaction as you. Just kind of laughed. There's two sections from the Holy Russian Empire, and I gathered that. I'm sure I don't have all the details, but that the president of Russia joined a church and kind of took it over and made it the Holy Russian Empire. And there's a section from Father Sergei Rizkov, which is done by F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah.
And then the female Russian soldier, Maria Zukanova, and that was Jerry Ryan from Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought those were both pretty well done, but it was just an interesting concept. And then, of course, what happened in Israel was super interesting, had them building a wall and things.
They out-Americaned the Americans,
yes.
I'm just saying. Maybe that's why Americans, of course, we have a huge Jewish population, so they're naturally going to be supportive of Israel, and that kind of comes through into our country also. But I just think you look at those Israelis and you go, man, those are settler types. That's what we like, you know, and you just love them.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah, yeah. And that was...
That's my pirate.
Yeah. And that was just... That was really neat. You know, like I said earlier, the Tel Aviv section, you know, with Carl Reiner, and then the Palestine, you know, and then how all that ended up. Didn't they end... They ended up together, right? They made a new...
Yeah, I believe so.
It wasn't even called Israel anymore. They called United something. United Palestine or something like that.
Right, because what happened is they, in common humanity, they had, you know, everything set, and they had their system, and they had their dogs they'd walk you by, and all these various things, but they weren't going to turn people away.
Yeah.
They were going to save who they could. They weren't going to worry about that. I think, didn't you have to have some connection, maybe? Because his father, the Israeli, or not the Israeli, the Palestinian or Muslim guy, or whoever he was, he was a janitor's son. But somehow the janitor was able to get them in there.
Yeah,
because he worked maybe for a Jewish group, or I don't remember now.
Right. Yeah, something like that. And I'm just looking through this Wikipedia entry trying to find the name of the country. But it was just interesting, you know. So that's another thing that's hopeful. If you can blow up the status quo somehow, and maybe something good will happen. You know, I know that we certainly don't want a zombie apocalypse to get these guys together.
No.
But it's just, you know, making good out of bad.
Well, and I guess that's it. The common goal that is bigger than the small problems, those have to fall by the wayside, and they'll reestablish themselves eventually because people are people. But that's one of the things he talks about when he's looking at the United States. And the section on California is really telling because they're not worried about zombies as much. Once that's kind of under control, what they have to worry about is re-educating all these people who were only in the service industry and no one knows how to do anything. And that's part of an underlying theme of this book, too. I mean, you've got the soldiers and things. They've been trained for their stuff. But people like me, do I have a garden? Do I have a skill that's useful to the community as a whole? I could go cook for people. I could cook in a big kitchen and serve people, and I could prepare things like that. I could do that all day long. That's my one skill like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can program your computer.
Yeah, see? And so it was really, I loved when the guy's talking about, a lot of the instructors and the people who became important were people who before had been maids and gardeners and lawn men and... you know, fix it up mechanics and everything, because they were the only ones who had skills that we could actually call doing something.
Yeah.
And I kind of came away from the book, these apocalyptic books, I always wind up going, okay, if I had to leave in 15 minutes, and we've talked about this before, what would I grab? You know, the dogs, the leashes, the bowls, the food, what else?
Yeah.
And this one, though, I came away going, what can I actually do? Besides write, or, you know, my advertising job, or that kind of thing. And it's funny because lately my husband, who was always very handy but got so busy and kids and stuff that we started hiring out stuff, he started doing things like fixing faucets again himself. And it's, and those are the kind of skills that they're talking about.
Yeah.
We can't even fix a faucet.
Yeah, we recently moved in a new house, so we're just learning. We've got a little greenhouse in the backyard, just learning how to do that kind of thing. And you know, my wife already knows a bunch of it, but this is all new for me. I haven't ever really done gardening, but
I'm
excited to try it.
Yeah.
You can grow Hershey bars in the greenhouse, I think.
I love it. I'm gonna come see you when it's World War Z time.
Excellent. Yeah, but you know, you can't help but to think about that stuff. And heck, if something happened, I think that what I would do is try to get back to Malad, where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we spent the last 15 years anyway. It's funny that I just said where I'm from, because I guess that's how I feel about that
right.
town. But anyway, that's where I'd try to get. You know, a small town, know everybody. I mean, that would be a good place to be.
Yeah, and I guess I've made a small town for myself in the middle of Dallas. I don't have a small town I'd get to, but my main concern when I think about stuff like that, I'm like, well, Hannah only lives 5 miles away. How would we get Rose from L.A. to here?
Yeah.
Could we ever see her again?
Yeah.
You know, and so those are the things that you, because I'm like, we have a big backyard. If we could band together with people so it was fairly secure, we could donate it to gardening. And, you know, so you do that. That's the kind of thinking that you do about, well, practically, if everything went wrong.
Yeah.
And then I always think, well, you know, I act as if that's the only way things could go wrong. And then I start reassessing my tornado preparedness. Because they have 139 tornadoes a year in Texas on the average.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I only saw that because last night on the weather, they were talking about a tornado that hit, was it Seattle or near somewhere in Washington?
Really? Yeah.
Everybody was saying, it's such a surprise. And so the weather guy had gone back and said, well, there are an average of 1 to 2 tornadoes a year in Washington. And he goes, and that's an average because there are many years when they don't have any.
Wow.
And he goes, but there's 139 a year in Texas.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was in Idaho Falls, Idaho. That's where I grew up most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a tornado there when I was a kid.
Ah.
And I recall my brother Alan climbing the tree in the backyard to see if he could see it. No lie. I mean, it wasn't anywhere near us. It was miles away.
I don't care.
But yeah, I know. And I was horrified, but
I grew up in Kansas.
I was not the teenager or the kid who would climb a tree to see a tornado. I was the one that would run to the basement.
Well, and I could still remember being in the basement one time because in Kansas, and I must have talked about this on here before, but you would be on the radio because that was back in the day, but you would be listening to them tracking 3 or 4 tornadoes at a time during one of these big storms.
Yeah.
And I still remember being in the basement with my brother and sister and my parents both in the backyard trying to get one of the dogs in the house. And I'm just like at the window well going, we don't care about the damn dog. Get in here, you know?
Yeah.
Because the tornado was really close. So,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we don't have basements here, and it's a great source of internal stress.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Is that because of water or something?
I'm assuming it's, I don't know why it is.
I was just curious. Yeah, I have no idea. The house that I'm in right now kind of has a half basement. It's really nice. It's got bigger windows in the basement than usual basements. But, here where I live, I don't think that tornadoes could ever be an issue. We've got mountains around us and everything. I think that messes that whole possibility up.
Well, there you go.
Poor tornadoes.
You'd have earthquakes or something.
Yeah, we do have
huge
that.
Snowstorms or
lots of snow.
Snowed in for weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that we were talking just a little bit beforehand? Isn't that part of the what is it? Church of Latter-day Saints? Is that
which is the by far the predominant religion here is. Part of what they do is they collect a year's worth of food.
Right.
So that's just one of the things that they're asked to do. It's not like they don't make them do that, but they say, hey, this is strongly recommended that you have a year's worth of food in your house. And there's all kinds of little companies that sell things in cans and that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could buy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my sister did that. They just because they lived, I think, kind of near where you're living, and there weren't, you know, I think they were Episcopalian, but they just were worried about being shut in for a long time because of the snow.
Yeah, and that's true. That's really true. And another thing, you know, all the houses that are being built today don't have fireplaces anymore and things. And it seems to me like, man, you've really got to have a fireplace. Because if you lose power in the middle of winter for a week, man, you're going to get cold.
You're going to build your own fireplace somewhere.
Yeah, and there are houses, I mean, houses being built around here that don't have that. It's really surprising how we take this electricity for granted. It's like, this is going to be here, and it's always going to be here, and it takes so little just to turn it off. I mean,
well, I'd say I even think about that sometimes when, especially after reading this book, excuse me, the computer, I was putting my review of the movie up, and it was down to like 6%, my laptop, and I was like, oh, I really should plug that in and recharge it, because if I woke up and the electricity was off, what would I do, you know, if I needed it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's funny. That might be the least of my concerns, actually, on the run.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, we should talk about the movie. Where are we at? We've been talking for about a half an hour so far, and we haven't mentioned Brad Pitt or his hair.
Yeah, looming in my mind, large. The hair. A huge problem. It looks like Angelina just took some scissors and whacked it off. You know, these people have money. They can get decent haircuts.
Oh, that's funny. That is too
Doesn't
funny.
Even have to be shorter. Just has to be better. He looks like, remember Third Rock from the Sun, Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That kid character. I hated that hair on him. I really hated on Brad Pitt.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt these days, much better. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, Jenny, you know, from SFF Audio sent me this little graphic that shows World War Z the book and World War Z the movie and what they have in common. And it says the title. You know, it's just one of those, I forget what you call those charts, but, you know, they overlap in the middle and in there.
Like
it just
a Venn
says
diagram.
The title. Yeah.
Well,
so
the,
in a way, you know, I guess that the. It kind of is set in the same universe as the book, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, but, you know, I don't think that the cure was that way. You know, there really wasn't a cure in the book at all. So,
no.
But yeah, the so World War Z is basically a zombie movie with Brad Pitt. But it does have in common the worldwide feel to it. Which again is like a Bourne movie or a James Bond movie, where he's going to different countries. He's just not running around, you know, the United States like most of the zombie films I've seen. This does have that global perspective.
Yeah, he doesn't wind up in all the different places, although they threaten to do it because they've decided they have to find Patient Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just gonna. Oh, I'm sorry. Spoilers, as everybody knows. But as an office mate said, who we all agreed, that movie is fun. It is a thrill roller coaster ride. You enjoy watching it, but do not worry about thinking too much, because all these questions pop up and you're like, who wrote this thing? So what were they thinking? You know, like, we've got to find Patient Zero. And the guy says, you know, it's not like there's a master vampire, and if you don't kill him, it's all the vampires won't die. He's like, find a couple of sick people near you, stick an arm out the window. You got a couple of zombies there. Look at them. This is how you do any disease. And then I liked the constant use of, or the at least the initial use of the Captain Kirk solution, as or investigation, as I call it. Send everybody important into the most dangerous area to gather evidence.
Yeah, it did have the you know, you mentioned Captain Kirk. It had the Captain Kirk thing where it's like, hey, you are the only one that can go do this for us, and we need you to go do this. That's a Captain Kirk moment.
Well, and then I'm like, oh, 48 hours, that's it. He's for sure dead. And the guy's like, well, I tried my hardest to save your wife and children from being tossed off this big boat. And I'm like, I think saying, no, I have to protest is not trying your hardest. And mm-hmm. I think that was kind of cold to just throw them out that quickly. And then I'm like, wait, what am I saying? It's the UN running this thing. And that became our refrain for the rest of the week. Oh, the UN.
That's
which is what
funny.
The CIA guy says when they hit the DMZ in South Korea. And he's like, oh, the UN's here. We're saved.
Oh, that makes me laugh. So, yeah, Brad Pitt is like a special ops guy from the UN, you know, so I guess that's what you call him. Oh, you know, he's not, you know, he doesn't run around with weapons, though, really.
He can. If he wants to, he can.
Yeah, he can.
He can take a headshot.
Right,
or
right.
give a headshot. Sorry, can't take one.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about this movie, it was PG-13, which is refreshing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it was a zombie movie that was intense, and yet I don't think I saw a head explode or, you know, some of the stuff that they seemed so
You're
important.
Right.
I mean, it was all, there wasn't, the gore was implied, but you didn't see it. Like,
right.
I remember a moment where Brad Pitt was running through a facility that had a bunch of zombies in it, and he got, yeah. he got his implement stuck in
I know,
a zombie's head. And, but, you know, normally they'd say, oh, we've got to show this and let's get the mm-hmm. makeup and this will be really gross and let's show that. None of it was shown, but I still cringed, you know, like, yeah. But we
well,
didn't see it.
Yeah.
And
because
I thought that
Tom,
was neat. You didn't have
I
to.
I would cover
it.
My eyes and Tom would go, no, they didn't show it.
Yeah.
And you could just see him trying to, he's embedded it in the floor. He hit so hard. So, yeah,
yeah.
exactly. That's a good point. I had not thought of that part of it.
Yeah. So, but it was well done in that way, I thought. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I liked, actually, in Brad Pitt's character, Gary, with two R's. I'm sorry, just can't help it. This may be part of it out in me so much. But he was so just naturally, intensely curious that he'd be racing away and pulling his family away from some horrible danger, and they're running as fast as they can. But he's still looking over his shoulder going, what is going on? And you always kind of got the feeling he's just like, I can't, I'm so curious, what's happening now?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd do that over and over, and you saw the quality that made him into the person who could go in and put things together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did like that aspect of it.
Right. Yeah, I did like that, too.
And some of the details, like when he's behind that big, he's in that glass room in the laboratory, and there's that one zombie on the other side, and he's just snapping his teeth at him, kind of chattering them like a dog, you know, I got my teeth in you. And I was like, I'd seen other ones, they had other ones doing that during certain moments, and I loved that because it was just so effective in terms of this is the one goal. It was just a neat, to me, visual.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, I liked it too.
I would say...
go ahead.
Overall, the problem with the movie was that we only had one person to care about. I didn't feel a connection with the wife and children or the intensity of his worry about them. I didn't feel he didn't have sidekicks mm-hmm. who you learn to love and care about even in a very short time, who you could be worried about also. You had partway through, he is joined by a young woman, but she's not ever personalized really for you. And so the only person who you're following through the movie is Gary, Brad Pitt's character. And you're never really worried about him because he's Brad Pitt. He's making it through the movie, and you know he's making it through the movie. And so that reduced a lot of suspense for me. I mean, there were still the moments where, oh my gosh, who's going to jump out of behind a door? Mm-hmm. But other than that, I was like kind of just following, going, huh, now what are they doing?
Well,
so I felt that was a flaw in the story.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. You know, it was an action movie pretty much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, I liked Brad Pitt's character a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it was balanced by his wife's character, who was not a very good. You know, she mm-hmm. was kind of weak, and you know, that's how I felt anyway. You know, but I did feel the intensity of his caring about them, and that just may be, you know, baggage that I have. You know, if you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure as parents, you know, if something like that happens, it's like, holy crap, I've got to take care of these kids and get these kids out of here. That was all I needed to understand his motivation.
Okay.
That whole scene at the beginning where they're in the car and they've got to go to the grocery store and then they end up in that apartment building. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of worry for me there.
Well, that was good because mm-hmm. you were worried about everyone. You kept going, why is that kid just standing there? Why weren't you holding both hands, lady?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That
was intense. He went to the pharmacy to, you know, he thought to go to the pharmacy and get this asthma medicine. I mean, that was pretty smart. And, that was all really intense. And how, you know, society is just crumbling around him. Not only is the zombies there, but, and then that connection he had with that junkie who was in the pharmacy to get whatever he wanted. I thought that was a nice moment, too.
Yeah, no, that whole scene, that whole beginning part was really great that way.
Yeah.
I agree. But the problem is they didn't, once he went into the bigger adventure, you know, other than him calling her and going, oh, I'm so worried about you. Oh, the battery's dying. Well, he had no ability to impact their safety.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and so
all he could do was worry. I felt that too, that
right. All
he could do, okay, now I'm going to be away from them when all you want to be is with them. That I felt. You know.
Oh yeah, definitely, because he gets done in Wales or wherever it is, and he and that young soldier are leaving, and he's kind of like zipping up his coat or whatever it is. He's kind of settling his clothes, so you know. And I was like, and now I'm walking to Nova Scotia because that's where it takes to get my family back. You know, you just feel like that. But the thing was, is once you got those initial scenes done, you didn't have. He couldn't help the wife and kids.
That's true.
They're kind of at the mercy of whatever, and she's just kind of going, oh, no, now we have to go here. Oh, Gary. she was weak. Yeah, I'm just saying.
I agree with you 100% on her character. So. I mean, she could have been a lot more.
Yeah.
And, and what's interesting, you know, at the beginning of the movie, I got the impression that he had quit the UN – for her career.
Right.
Well, and I don't know what her career was, but
they never told us.
But, you know, you would think then that, you know, I think that that's cool. I think that that's neat. I would like that, you know, but you'd think that she would be really strong, you know, somebody who's, you know, hey, I've got this career and I'm going to do this and it's going to, you know, it's going well. You'd think that that would be a different type of person who would be succeeding in that way than she was portrayed.
It just wasn't well written.
Yeah.
Let's just agree on that. And I mean, it was all those other things that I enjoyed watching it. I'm not sorry I watched it. Some of those visuals I wish I had seen in the big theater. The Jerusalem crumbling thing was amazing.
Yeah.
And them leaving Jerusalem. Again, though, I never worried about him ever. It was just like, oh, how are they going to do that? Because I knew he had to get out because he can't die there. It's Brad Pitt. What are we going to do?
I think I must push that out, you know, that fact that you're talking about.
Well, I just...
Because I was worried throughout the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, and I guess, you know, in the back of my mind, I guess that I have that word, you know, I know that he's going to make it. You know, it's like Captain Kirk is going to make it to the end of the movie.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Even in the last Star Trek movie. So.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, you know,
but
when I'm watching that movie and when I'm watching most movies, I guess I don't think that way. I go ahead and let that happen.
You know what? I didn't think about it. I just realized when I was done that I was never worried about him.
Oh, okay.
When I was thinking
I was concerned about him. That scene in the airplane was intense.
Okay, well, that was, I was upset about the dog. Okay. I was like, this dog was completely innocent.
Yep,
it gave a warning. And why did, I have to say, one of the best parts of this book was how the Israelis used dogs to spot stuff.
Uh-huh.
Why didn't they put that in the movie?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm watching, the people are filing in. I'm like, this would have been a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
You put the dogs on the side. He has one line to Brad Pitt's character going, oh, this. And then wouldn't that thing in the airplane have hung together better?
Yeah.
Because I was like, nobody even knows. Because guess what? We have one of the leading experts on all this crapola down there. He never noticed. He never even noticed big noises do anything. Let's have loudspeakers and a microphone, everyone. And I'm like, really? And I'm sorry, that was the moment when I just went, I hate all of you who are wasting this, because it could just a little bit of thought would have made it so much better. Yeah, so I'm sorry.
That's neat. That reminds me, I wanted to tell you that, you know, we've got our dog Tonks, who's you know, German Shepherd, and we showed her the training film I Am Legend so that she would know exactly what to do.
Do you have a side-by-side treadmills for her now?
That's a good idea. We got to get that done.
That was one of the things where I was like, I do actually kind of love that, keeping the dog in shape.
It's like, okay, this is what you do not do when we go to find a zombie.
Yeah. Right. Don't chase a deer, damn it. Just stay out of those buildings.
Exactly. So she's trained. She's fully trained. I feel like a responsible dog owner.
No, I think that's good. And a responsible family man. You have provided for your family's zombie attack needs. Done. What a guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really, my husband
always thinking. Always thinking.
Yeah. Well, so now back to the book. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because this is made up of all these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a favorite story?
Ooh. You know, the one that leaps out to me is the one, the underwater scene.
Oh.
Yeah. It surprises me, too. To have that one stand out so much, especially because, you know, it didn't have, you know, a lot of the meaning that the rest of it had, but but the thought of that was just horrifying to me. What happens is that there's zombies in the ocean, you know, and they're still alive, and they're walking out of the ocean sometimes, and they're like whole packs of them that may walk onto the beach and just start attacking. So they've taken to having these military guys go underwater and eliminate them, or at least try to figure out how can we herd them, or, you know, what can we do here, you know, to stop this from happening? How can we eliminate all this stuff? And and just the scenes there. Underwater where they're talking about the, you know, not being able to see, and suddenly you've got an arm in your face, and that was rough.
Yeah,
but it was unique, and that's why it stood out to me. It really, I thought it was good.
Well, the whole aspect of having zombies, because they are dead, they don't have to breathe, be under the water, or come out of the ocean, like on that Indian beach where they had all those wrecked vessels that they would cut down for scrap or fix or whatever it was they were doing to them, and they just come out of the water and start eating people. I just thought, why has nobody thought about this before? That is completely logical. They don't care where they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a brilliant concept to weave into that book, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I missed it in the movie. I was like, you could have done this in a few places. It would have been very effective. But because I had two different ones who, especially rereading the book, these two never fail to grab me. But they're more predictable, I think, than what you were struck by. Uh-huh. And one is Colonel Christiana Eliopoulos, who is the fighter pilot who shot down over the bayous.
Okay.
Or over Cajun country, and has to find her way unaided except by a radio voice to safety to be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And because the question at the end of that is always, was there really someone, or was it just her in her head? And she's crazy.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Kondo Tatsumi, who is the good-for-nothing, slacker, Japanese indulged son who is always on the computer, and he lives so much on the computer that he only starts to notice something's wrong because they glory in gathering the most information and beating each other, that when people aren't answering his questions, where these people are all disappearing on email, and it's only after everything's happened around him, and he's in basically an apartment full of zombies, that he suddenly goes, what? And looks up and has to learn how to live.
Mm. Yeah, that's neat. Yeah, those are both great. Yeah, my favorite narrated section was probably, I really liked Nathan Fillion's Abandons in a Cave. I thought that was, you know, I think, you know, when I first started listening to this book, that's when I said, oh, we should do this, because I was really, really into it. At the beginning, and that was the one that clinched it right there, was his description, and I thought he did a really good job.
He did, because I don't think I was aware it was him until later I went back and started looking.
And that's something that is common with all these narrators. You know, Simon Pegg. You mentioned that to me. You said, oh, wait till you hear Simon Pegg. So I listened past that section, and then I got the list, and I said, you know, I wonder where Simon Pegg is going to be. And I was shocked that I had already heard him.
Yeah.
And then he plays this American, this White House spin doctor.
Yeah. He was good.
It was really good, but it was, I had no idea it was him.
Yeah, no, I agree.
No idea. And I listened to it again, and I'm like, wow, that's really impressive.
And see, my favorite was Mark Hamill. Mm. It's Todd Wainio.
Uh-huh.
I guess is how you say that name. And he mostly, maybe, because I was so surprised at how good he was.
Uh-huh.
And if you'd have said, listen for Mark Hamill, then I probably could have picked him out. But he's this low-level soldier, very down to earth, you know, a little earthy, a little redneckish, but he's great. It's just enough.
That's cool.
And you know, he appears several times.
He is a terrific voice actor. He does the Joker for this Batman animated series.
Oh, really?
And everybody online, you know, several years ago, used to talk about it all the time, how incredible it was. So I watched one, and yeah, he is really fantastic.
Yeah, that's Hannah and Rose both love that series. And then, that's like when the kids were little and I would always watch stuff with them. So I was always casting around for stuff that was just a little better than My Little Pony or whatever. And we watched Gargoyles. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And I know the kids couldn't appreciate this. Hannah, just recently having watched Star Trek The Next Generation, went, oh my gosh, this was Jonathan Frakes. And I went, I know. The whole time I was like, no one cares, but oh my gosh, it's Jonathan Frakes and he's amazing.
That's funny.
So, yeah.
But yeah, exactly. I watched a lot of those episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we watched almost all of them, and now I don't remember most of them. And Hannah has watched them several times, and she'll talk about them as if we just saw them yesterday. And I'm like, I don't remember. I remember being surprised there was so much Shakespeare in them.
Yes, Shakespeare.
So, as Catholics, does this book have something for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. You got to care about each other. That's, you know, whenever I read one of these books, you always think about, you know, what can be done. And again, you know, we've talked about being part of the world and how our religion promotes that. You know, like Buddhism kind of promotes being outside the world, where it's one thing and you're outside of it, and that's where your nirvana is, you know. But for us, it's being part of it, and that's what I think about, you know. And to me, you know, it's all one big thing, you know, like we've said before, but that's the kind of thing that I think about, is community and helping each other and things like that. I don't have, you know, I listened to Father Barron. Have you heard his, did you listen to that?
Not on this.
Yeah. He talked about World War Z specifically. Yeah. And one of the things, you know, it's a little bit over my head. It's something that I know is kind of a deep theological thing that I have not looked into much. But he was talking about the zombies as kind of a meditation on sin and redemption, and how sin, there's a certain aspect of sin that acts as a disease. And is transmitted from person to person, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a concept that I haven't looked into. And so to me, that's a difficult one. So
the redemption part with the zombies is very difficult, because when the only thing is a head chop, you know, that's really the analogy falls down there.
Yeah.
I see where he's going with it. Yeah.
And with the movie, he was talking about, you know, well, Brad Pitt's blood, solution,
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. He does offer himself as the selfless sacrifice to mm-hmm. try and save everyone.
Right.
I'll test it on me.
Yeah.
Because, and that's kind of an interesting point, because what that does is talk about in our psyche, it's very embedded to admire that kind of selfless behavior. We know what that means. No greater has love has a man than give his life for his fellow man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For me, the community thing, of course, is huge. And that's always a struggle for Americans because we're raised to be individualists. You want to give help, but to ask for it is weak.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to ask for it from each other, because it's, we're giving other people the chance for blessing when we let them help us.
Yeah,
and to admit that you're weak is not a bad thing. I mean, we think it's a bad thing, but we're all supposed to admit the absolute truth about ourselves. That's humility. You know what's good, you know what's bad. And to look at weakness as something that you have to hide, we are all weak. We all have to have help from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance it? And then the other thing that struck me was, we didn't talk about this at all, but the one of the things I really liked was how the Europeans had to handle things. They greatly retired to castles, especially the English.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those were the kind of defense, if they didn't have underground passages, that could, that were meant to hold out those kind of, you know, just brutal invaders. And the one of the guys is talking about the British family, or the royal family, sorry,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, he goes, this is the reason we remain a united kingdom. Their task, their mandate is to personify all that is great in our national spirit. They must forever be an example to the rest of us, the strongest and bravest and absolute best of us. In a sense, it is they who are ruled by us instead of the other way around, and they must sacrifice everything, everything, to shoulder the weight of this godlike burden. Otherwise, what's the flipping point? Just scrap the whole damn tradition, roll out the bloody guillotine, and be done with it altogether. They were viewed very much like castles, I suppose, as crumbling, obsolete relics with no real modern function other than as tourist attractions. But when the skies darkened and the nation called, both reawoke to the meaning of their existence. One shielded our bodies, the other our souls. Hmm. And that made me think of the value of all the stuff that gets tossed out and called not important by the modern world, including the church or faith.
Yeah.
And those, that's outmoded. What do you need it for? It's ridiculous. And it's like, but those are the things that shield our souls way down. We all need that stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know if it taught me anything, but it just was a reflection for me. So
interesting.
But I do like that idea of sin as a communicable disease, because I keep that vision of from above of Jerusalem, the waves, and how fast it goes through there.
Yeah, and that was, you know, you just reminded me of a point that Father Barron made that I really liked, was how Jerusalem built the walls to keep all that stuff out, and that that's not the way to handle the problem.
'Cause then it keeps it in.
Yeah, because exactly. So it finds a way in, you know,
yeah.
It finds a way in. So he said, so that's not going to be the solution. So what is the solution? And he said, you need something from outside ourselves. And that's where he started to talk about Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and see, I tend to not watch the YouTube stuff because I just, for one thing, I forget it's there because I just don't often have time to sit in front of a computer.
Mm-hmm.
But he is so good at connecting all that stuff.
Yeah, and I subscribe to that channel. I don't watch everything, but, you know, when he was talking about World War Z and I had seen it, you know, I thought, hey, mm-hmm. this could be interesting. So he's taken to, you know, doing some movie reviews and things. He talks for about 10 minutes on that.
Yeah, he's done that a lot. And, in fact, I don't watch them. When I first discovered him, I didn't watch him because I found out he would just, like us, he's doing the spoilers because he's talking about the movie. And it was like, whoa, I haven't seen that. And then I kind of forget. I subscribe to his podcast of his homilies.
Yeah, and I do too.
And those are never that long either, but they're very thought-provoking and good.
They're always good, yeah.
Yeah. He's to me, he's like a modern Fulton Sheen. I don't know if you know Fulton Sheen.
Yep, I do.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
Very popular in the 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah. So good stuff. Movie and book. Thumbs
good
up.
Book choice. I hadn't read this for at least a few
and
months.
Welcome to October. I didn't say happy October.
Oh, yeah.
Favorite month of the year.
Best month of all.
Best month of the year. Hey, and I do have a something extra, which is not October related.
Okay.
But Joseph Suzanka on his blog a couple of weeks ago said, hey, this is a reminder. There's some Shakespeare on PBS tonight. And I was like, well, I should check that out. And what they're doing is it's called the Hollow Crown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a series of Shakespeare plays starting, it was Richard II, Henry the Fourth Part One, Henry the Fourth Part Two. No, it's online. And then Henry the Fifth.
Okay.
And so far there's been 2 weeks and there's a website and I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
And Richard II was absolutely incredibly great. And then Henry the Fourth Part One was on Friday, and then they'll show Part Two the next Friday, and then Henry the Fifth. Okay. So it's interesting to watch them in order. You know, I'm a Shakespeare rookie pretty much. I've seen Hamlet and Macbeth and Much Ado About Nothing. You know, so I've seen some and I really like them, but I haven't really delved. But this is interesting because in Richard II, Henry the Fourth is in Richard II.
Right.
And he succeeds Richard II, and then Henry V, of course, succeeds Henry IV. So it's all, when to watch them all in order is telling a bigger story.
And, there was a series last year that it was on PBS. It was called Shakespeare Uncovered. Did you see that?
I did not.
It was very good. It was a 6-part series. Each one had a different actor hosting it. And it wasn't Derek Jacobi. It was this guy where I'm like, it's that guy who I love. And I can't remember his name. But he did a whole section on Richard II and the two Henry IV plays.
Oh.
And what they do is they talk about, they give a little context, as the review said that made me want to watch it. They said, if we'd have all seen this in high school, we would never have stopped watching Shakespeare ever, because it takes you to the places and shows them to you. It gives the actors perspective on playing it and looking into the characters more. So there's that kind of help with the motivation. And this particular actor played Henry IV in all three of the movies by two different directors. So he's very good. But, you know, it had Miranda Richardson did one on two of the comedies. Derek Jacobi did, was it Hamlet? No, that was David Tennant. So, of course, I watched that one. But, you know, so that kind of thing. And they're very interesting. And they provide a good background for what you're talking about. And also, Chopbard is working his way through those history plays. He's done Richard II and Henry IV Part One, and he's partway through Henry IV Part Two.
Ooh, wow.
He goes through them one or two scenes at a time.
Oh, that's great. I need to do that because I liked Richard II so much.
Well, and he's an actor, at least in his spare time. I'm never really sure on his background, but he is great because he's like, we're not adding things to Shakespeare that he didn't give us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, none of this, Hamlet, did he have a mommy complex? Well, what did Shakespeare show us? That's what we've got. And he always puts it in context, but he digs deeper so that you're thinking about questions about the characters you never would have thought about. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, cool.
I'll just add those onto the something extra.
And they are they're really terrific productions, too.
Well, and I've been going through Macbeth.
Uh-huh.
Using Chopbard and the Archangel, which our library has all the Archangel audio recordings, which is done by the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Nice.
Of these plays. And then I was listening to Chopbard on it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. The way, you know, you suddenly start, it pulls you out like some of these books we talk about in movies.
Yeah.
It's about life.
Right. Absolutely. I saw King Lear with Ian McClellan.
Ooh.
It was either PBS or BBC, and that was astounding. I think I finally understood you know, it takes, you know, I'm a little bit dense, but it finally understood, you know, the how good an actor can be in a Shakespeare play. You know, there's something that clicks in your head, like, oh, you know, these lines exactly how you enunciate, and it's really stunning. You know, like Richard II, as I understand in Richard II, I mean, that Richard II, you can be sympathetic to him, or he could be a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And just depending on how you play him, and with the same words, you know?
Right, and that's...
So it was interesting. There was some Christ imagery in there that it took me a while to figure out why that was in there and things. It's really, really interesting to listen to. So, you know, the director, however that person sets it all up, you know, can make you feel different about these characters with the same lines. That's a very interesting thing to me.
And that's some of what the Shakespeare Uncovered talks about. And also Chopbard, who will be in productions of it. So he'll say, I've seen it played like this and like this. But to me, it only makes sense like that. So you're suddenly going, oh.
Yeah, okay. I've had that moment. You know, I've never done Shakespeare, but I've done a few plays, you know. And there, you know, there comes a point in rehearsal where you all of a sudden you understand a line differently. And you start to say it differently. And it changes really the whole play. Because all of a sudden, this you start to understand this person more. And I can just imagine, you know, with the depth that Shakespeare hits, how amazing that must be to be able to internalize all that.
Well, yeah, and isn't that kind of what we're doing when we talk about books and movies here, in a sense of we're bringing all this other stuff to it. And it's that thing we've talked about before. The artist puts it out there. Yeah. For whatever reason, they created it. And Shakespeare's point, it was, I've got to keep the theater full, you know. But it's what the people, like in this case, the actors bring to it. It's what the audience brings to it. And that's what makes it a living, breathing thing that can be used for good or ill.
That's interesting. I remember, creative process. You know, Orson Scott Card said that, you know, movies are a director's medium. And plays are an actor's medium. And he said novels are a writer's medium. And, you know, I'm starting to think about television a little bit differently than I have been. In fact, I'm really thinking about that next movie picking somehow television so we can talk about it some more. But it seems like that television right now is really where the writers are. You know, there's a lot of incredible writing going on in TV. And I wonder if that's somehow replacing that theater. You know, there's still... I think movies have almost been... Well, not almost been. Often have been ruined by... You know, they say if you write a screenplay, first of all, you know, your chances of getting it done are pretty slim. But the number of people who get a whack at that thing...
Yeah.
You know, and for ridiculous reasons, like, you remember I sent you that that Jesus of, or what was it?
Yes.
Steve Martin wrote about Passion of the Christ, right?
Notes on the Passion.
He's like, yeah, I mean, those kinds of things, I mean, but it was satire of Hollywood and how, you know, they're saying, you know, wouldn't this be better if there was a dog? Or wouldn't it be better, you know, if, you know, whatever they might, you know, think, you know, we've got to hit this demographic.
Then have Jesus look right in the camera.
Exactly.
I think it would be a good laugh moment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like,
so it's just like, you know, come on. So, you know, I mean, movies have become, there's just way too much that needs to happen to get the movie made. And,
and
I realized, I don't know, just not that long ago that I've been enjoying television way more than I've been enjoying movies. And, you know, there's a list of series. So it might be interesting to, I mean, clearly we're not going to watch a whole series to do a podcast on it, but it might be interesting to take, you know, like the first episode of something
and there are a couple of web series that actually I've had on the list for a while, that those are the ones that watching an entire season takes an hour and a half, you know, and so you could watch two or three seasons if you know ahead of time, like The Booth at the End or The Guild, you know.
Yeah, we watched one that Netflix had on there that is intense and it is definitely rated R, but it's called Orange is the New Black.
And I've heard of that. That's a prison one?
Yeah, and man... I mean, it was really something up till about three quarters of the way through. I think there was 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought, oh, they're so close to doing something really poignant here. And you could feel that they were headed somewhere really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was as if they decided that they wanted to have a season two. I mean, you could almost feel the moment yeah. when it happened. And then it became stuff happening for the rest of the season where they're just trying to turn the screws on this poor lady. And yeah. and I almost didn't finish it. I ended up, you know, I finished it, but I don't know that I'll watch season two
mm-hmm.
because they, it's mm-hmm. like they missed their moment. They built yeah. up to it and it was really stunning and then they lost it. And that's clearly my opinion because I think a lot of people really love the series, but it is intense. It's definitely rated R. It's not pretty. But
please
it,
don't it, pick it.
It was, no, I wouldn't. But it was interesting. But again, you know, the people that were writing that series, I don't know, you feel like that they were really onto something. And I think that that's happening a lot in television right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mindy Project I have liked, but they continually have been tweaking it and messing around with it. And I'm like, you know, it started off smart and funny and not that gross and all this stuff. And they're continually yanking out characters, putting in new characters. And I'm thinking, I think what we saw at the beginning was Mindy Patel. Is that what's her name? Anyway, whatever her name is, I think that was her vision. And mm-hmm. then the network got in there and started messing around with it. And I'm like, I don't really, it's so iffy all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like watching Community was, where it had a slow start. But then once it got going, until they yanked the main guy, you had a few solid seasons.
Well, you know, big news last week was that Breaking Bad ended.
Right.
I've seen the first maybe three or four episodes of that. My mm-hmm. wife got into that briefly. Were you a watcher of Breaking Bad?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was just
curious. I love Bryan Cranston mm-hmm. because of Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
But for one thing, because it was on cable, and I think because this is kind of a golden age of TV.
Yeah, yeah.
You have so much other TV that I'm like, you know, I have my kind of gritty shows already. I don't need to add something more.
Right, right.
You know, I have Person of Interest. That's enough. Oh, wait, that's not gritty, but I'm just saying.
Anyway, well, but we'll see. So I have a movie to pick, and that's kind of what's been in my mind. I thought it'd be interesting to yeah. talk about television.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just say, let's talk about television. But we've already have, haven't we?
If you pick yeah. if you pick something and you have a little advance warning,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if you're picking something that is a season or so,
yeah.
if it's regular, even hour-long shows, if it's for a few months down the road, I can do that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, yeah. All right. That's because I have a few series that I thought would be interesting to talk about, yeah, too.
And I'd be more than willing to do that as well. Because I think that there's a lot of really interesting things going on right now, and a lot of it's really worthwhile.
Well, so. And I know just enough people who are proud of not having a television. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's like being proud of not having a book. You can read Danielle Steele or you can read Charles Dickens. Yeah. Are you going to get rid of all books because there's a bunch of trashy ones? You know.
Bet. Yeah, if we could watch seasons 1 through 8 of The Bachelorette, I think that there's some things that we could talk about.
I'll get my husband on here to talk with you on that one. Is there skinny dipping? Because then,
isn't The Bachelorette the one where you've got this woman who has to pick a guy to marry or something?
Probably.
Yeah.
I get them mixed up and they give you a rose and I've never understood if the rose meant you're out or you're in. We only ever see the last 2 minutes of The Bachelor, actually, now that I think about it, because it's right in front of something else that I tape. And we're like, oh, it's this thing. And Tom's always going, oh, these poor people are so screwed up.
These poor,
that's the
poor
message
people.
We have from this.
I love it.
Just pity shoot. For them.
That's funny. So it is funny that we're in the golden age of reality TV, which I think largely stinks and is horrible for society. And then
yeah.
at the same time, we're in the golden age of this scripted TV, which is really something else at times.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it is funny. So. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, The Hollow Crown. Go get World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
And even the movie, just, you know,
yeah,
don't expect
it's fun.
To get...
Enjoy it.
Exactly.
I thought it was more intelligent than the last Star Trek movie.
I did not. But I would say that to me, I got done with it and I said, oh, this makes me think of Jurassic Park, the movie. And Tom looks at me and he goes, wow, they did feel a lot the same. And I went, yeah.
Really?
Huge, super expensive B movie.
You know, we didn't mention that Mark Forster directed that movie, who is Stranger Than Fiction, one of our favorites.
Yeah. Oh, it was his big time thing. Same I wish director. He'd have fixed the script to be as smart as Stranger Than Fiction. I kept going.
I think he did very well with the movie. Yeah, I think he did very well. I mean, okay. As box office and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I think the movie did very well. So he'll get another shot.
But Tom was looking at the reviews, and Rotten Tomatoes, 63% of critics liked it, so it was barely a tomato.
Gotcha.
And 72 or 3% of the regular audience liked it. Yeah. So. I think they were crying all the way to the bank, and somebody told me there's a sequel planned. I'm not sure I'll watch that sequel.
You know what? They ought to, you know, what they should do, if they're going to make another one, it shouldn't be Brad Pitt. You know, they could have done a series of films a lot like this book where there are different stories in the zombie apocalypse.
It could be a TV show.
It could be a TV show. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But if they're going to do a series of films, you know, like World War Z Underwater or something like that.
I know that's your favorite.
With a better title.
Oh, but, and I liked a show when I was, or was it a book? Wasn't there one about people living underwater? Maybe that was somebody who had a dolphin for a pet. We could put those together.
There you go.
The family living underwater in the clear house with the zombies.
There you go.
That would be very something. Suspenseful. We would all care.
We would all care.
I'm going to pitch it. I think it'll work.
Excellent. Sign me up.
Okay.
All right. Well, okay, you have a great... Oops, sorry. Go ahead.
Next is...
What's next? We got to see that.
Wait, it's my movie. Oh, yes. Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth, right.
You will care about that one, people. Yes. I don't care who you are.
Heck yeah. I love October. And then, the book.
Yeah, and then The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah, which is perfect, coming out on Halloween.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, we don't get this timing often.
Yeah. I got Dr. Sleep on audio, Stephen King's latest.
Oh, you're
not sure. Not sure when I'm going to get to it, but The Shining is one of his best books, and Dr. Sleep is a sequel. He doesn't write sequels very often.
I know, and I kind of feel like that's a good thing, but...
Yeah, it is, but he must have, you know, because he writes them rarely, I trust him on that, and we'll see. Yeah. You know, the only... The sequel
sweet, trusting man.
You know, the sequel stuff that he wrote, Dark Tower, I haven't even read those. I think I've read almost every other Stephen King novel except for his Dark Tower books.
Well, Hannah was trying them. Because so many people like them. And she read the first one, which I had read, and went, huh. Mm. And then she said, no, but everybody says the third one's really the one you should start with. So she went ahead and read the second. She goes, well, it was better, but not that great. And I said, so are you going to read the third one? Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm like, wow, that's not a way I want to spend my time.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So.
But, so we get to see little Danny Torrance all grown up.
Yeah, I don't really care about that.
Well, we'll see if it's good. I'll let you know.
Well, if it is good, then definitely, because he's burned me so many times. He has broken my heart.
You know, I haven't read a Stephen King novel in print since audiobooks became unabridged.
Really?
I mean, yeah, he was putting out unabridged audiobooks, and the narrators of his books were so good that I've just been on audio all the time.
Mm.
You know, I think, you know, The Stand was the last one I read. In fact, we had the audiobook for that too, but but I read that in print when we did it.
I'm just going to say, if I'd have had to listen to The Cell or whatever that was called, I would have hoped for one of those phones myself. It would have turned me into a mindless snapping zombie.
Oh, that's too funny.
That book was so hopeless and awful. I'm saying it.
Yeah.
Just defy me if you will. I'm just saying.
No reason to defy you.
Yeah. Oh, you can.
No,
it's okay.
No. My favorite books of his are still that first bunch. You know,
After Carrie, he's one of those...
Salem's Lot, The Shining, The Stand. I mean, from that period, those are my favorites still.
Yeah, I just think he can't get it back after
and
that.
I can't believe he hasn't written. You know, if he was going to write sequels, he could have written a sequel to Salem's Lot easily. But it's admirable. It's admirable that he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, because it leaves it open.
So I'm really thinking he's got something to say, or he wouldn't have done this. So.
Yeah, he doesn't need the money. That's for sure.
That is for sure.
Okay, super fast then. Yes. Ha ha. Ron Howard. Did you know he wanted to make a 3-movie, a trilogy of the Dark Tower series? And I'm like, I would watch that.
Yeah, I heard that he was going to do the
Dark
Tower.
And Stephen King was on board and everything, and they could not get the Hollywood people to go for it.
Are you kidding me? How is that a miss?
Right? And I'm thinking, between the two of those people, Ron Howard and Stephen King, how much do they care about this project? Because I feel like they themselves could fund the first movie.
That is stunning. I don't understand it. You know, Stephen King's had a lot of crappy movies.
Yeah.
You know, but I wonder if that's what they're thinking. But, you know, Ron Howard does not have crappy movies.
Not generally. He can.
Not generally.
You know, no one's perfect. Even Billy Wilder had a few stinkers in there, but still.
Yeah, I've got to see that latest movie of Ron Howard's. Everybody's just raving about it.
I know it. Yeah. It's about Formula One racing. But I'm sure I'll have to see it because my husband loves racing like that. And when he lived in Europe for a while, he went to those races. And,
oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. He and his father, it was a great male bonding moment. And they're not a lot of subject movies that I'm like, no. But I'm just like, car racing, really? I don't care.
Yeah.
And he says, it's about the characters. I'm like, oh, great. A soap opera with car racing.
Oh, too funny.
Anyway.
All right.
Enough of that.
You bet.
I'll go see it and I'll probably be the biggest fan in the world now.
That's right.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sick and tired of telling people that I'm not Thor.
That's what they said. They can't believe this has missed with young women because it's got Thor in it. And I'm like, can't believe it's missed with young women. Did you see the car racing going on? I'm just saying, people, even Thor is not enough for that.
Oh, too funny. All right.
I understand the problem. It's all guys saying that. Car racing and Thor. Yes.
I love it. All right. Well, we will see everybody in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your October. Read some Bradbury, for heaven's sakes.
Yes. Get scared.
Yep.
Talk to you soon,
all right,
everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.